Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Let's do a quick preview of the docket today. First, the case has been solved in regards to the death of the newlywed couple in Utah. Josh Duggar rhymes with hugger. Well, his attorneys have filed a sentencing brief, as has the government. We now know why the Queen's mom killer did it. Do you believe his story? Technology helps solve another homicide. A 17-year-old is going to be tried as an adult, and a man dies burying a body. I'll tell you about that. Maybe it's a little bit of karma. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. All right, aficionados, you know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't. Like the video if you do. Hit that bell so you receive notifications. And remember, if you can't watch us, you can always listen to us at any time by downloading us on any of your favorite podcasting apps. Just simply type in Crime Talk with Scott Reich. All right, you know the drill. Please support the people that support us. Go to crimetalksearch.com. I'm telling you. You need to check people out to make sure you know with whom you are dealing with, okay? Somebody new in your life, somebody you're dating, somebody you met on the internet, you need to check them out. A simple Google search is not enough. So when you go to crimetalksearch.com and you sign up for the subscription, which you can cancel at any time, but when you have that subscription, whether you are running one name or 50 names, it's all the same price. And when you do that search, you're going to get a report literally generated while you wait, which is going to have information regarding criminal history. It's going to show you emails that are associated with the person that you're searching. It's also going to show somebody's social media associated with that individual. So you think, why does this person have six different social media accounts? Why do they have all these emails? Is it because they're emailing somebody they shouldn't be? Perhaps you need to check them out. You're going to get property records. In some states, you're going to be able to get divorce records. You're going to get criminal histories, sex offender registry. Go to crimetalksearch.com. Do not become a victim. Check somebody out. Don't be a victim. crimetalksearch.com. As you may have noticed, we are no longer south of the border. We're back in the Crime Talk studios. So let's go ahead and open the docket for May 12th, 2022. All right. Do you remember the case in Utah? Well, authorities in Utah have identified a suspect in the murder of the newlywed couple of Kylan Schulte and Crystal Beck near Moab, Utah. Now, the Grand County Sheriff's Office has announced that Pinkiewicz, P-I-N-K-U-S-I-E-W-I-C-Z. That's right. Common spelling. He apparently has confessed or did confess to killing the two women shortly before he actually took his own life. Now, Mr. Pinkiewicz, common spelling, worked at the same McDonald's as Crystal Turner. Now, Kylan and Crystal were found deceased on August 18th near Moab at their campsite. Pinkiewicz fled Utah and took his own life within weeks of the slaying, and police are identifying him publicly now because they recently learned of his confession. Apparently, in the confession, he mentioned specific details that had not been publicly revealed, and the police are investigating whether Mr. Pinkiewicz was the creepy, intimidating man Schulte told friends they saw near their campsite shortly before their deaths. Investigators had long considered Pinkiewicz a person of interest and had tried to find and talk with him, but unfortunately, they had been unable to do so. Authorities say the case is still technically open, and they're still processing this new evidence from the recently located car and seeking new information. So, at least the family will hopefully have some closure there. In that particular case, just another senseless act for sure. Next on the docket, Josh Duggar rhymes with hugger. Well, as you may recall, he was convicted after a trial back on December 9th of 2021. He was convicted of having inappropriate images of minors. That's right. Bad stuff. Okay. He faces up to 20 years in prison. And when somebody is convicted or somebody pleads guilty, then the court orders that the pre-sentence investigation report be prepared. And in the federal system, they call them probation officers, even though no one's really going to ever get probation. Anyway, the probation officer prepares a report. It's all kinds of background information. They also look at the federal sentencing guidelines, and they do a preliminary analysis as to what the appropriate sentence would be under the federal sentencing guidelines, which are advisory, and only one factor that the court must consider in conducting the appropriate sentence, making sure that it is a fair sentence, no greater than reasonably necessary, to justify and assure all the principles of sentencing, i.e. punishment, deterrence, rehabilitation, and any other needs that the court thinks the defendant may have. Once that report is prepared, a copy goes both to the prosecution and the defense. The defense can file any objections, as can the prosecution. The prosecution will also file what they refer to as their sentencing memoranda, and then the defense can file their sentencing memoranda. Also, it's known as a motion for variance. The defense in this particular case has filed basically some letters from his family, what I refer to as good guy letters. Well, of course, his mother, his sisters, his wife is going to say he's a good guy. And you know, they're really trying to avoid it when they can only come up with stuff like he's a good guy. He's a good dad. He's very diligent and very organized man. He's very caring. Of course, there's no mention of what he did. Now, obviously, like I said, what do you expect other than he's a good guy from their family? Most parents will stand by their children regardless of whether they plead guilty or whether they are found guilty at trial, such is the case here. Well, the prosecutor is asking for the maximum sentence of 240 months. The defense doesn't ask for a specific date, but says obviously it should be no greater than reasonably necessary for the appropriate sentence and the goals of sentencing under 3553A of Title 18 of the United States Code to keep it as minimal as possible. Sentencing is coming up for Mr. Duggar on May 25th, so we'll find out what the judge is going to do. Obviously, Mr. Duggar went to trial, so he does not get the acceptance of responsibility downward variance as it relates to the federal sentencing guidelines, but he should not receive a trial tax for making the government come forward and present their evidence. And frankly, hey, this is the way the system is supposed to work. Even when people are convicted, it's good for everything to be out there for the world to see. What is the judge going to do? Well, it's early in prediction dates. We have previously run the federal sentencing guidelines, and I think that given his sentence, referring to Mr. Duggar, that he'd probably be in the 12 to 14 year range for a sentence. Now, the judge doesn't have to give that. He can give all the way up to the maximum sentence, and nothing illegal is taking place at that point. Only if it was greater than the maximum penalty would it be an illegal sentence. What do I think the judge will do? I don't know. If I was the judge, and here we have Mr. Duggar, a father of seven children and one recently newborn, I think the sentence would be something very high on the sentencing range, so that basically he would not have any contact with his children until they were over the age of 18. But hey, that's just what I would do. Let's see what the court does on May 25th. Next on the docket, we now know why the Queen's mom killer did what he did, allegedly. So, quick David Bonilla update. The handyman lover charged with the murder of the Queen's mom, Orsolya Gall, reportedly told police that he believed she gave him HIV over the course of their two-year extramarital affair. Now, David reportedly told detectives when he was brought in for questioning that she was cheating on me with somebody and she gave me HIV. He goes on to tell officers that she lied to me and used me, and she told me that she loved me, but she couldn't be with me, only with one person. She took a phone call, apparently, while he was there from another guy, and she said she was going to go see him. That apparently made him rather angry, and he couldn't accept it. Mr. Bonilla then went on to detail to detectives his account of how the gory Saturday morning unfolded, noting that at one point their argument involved Miss Gall had denied having HIV and said that she had no longer wanted to be with him. Now, Mr. Bonola told investigators that she kept saying, "I hate you." Well, and then she stabbed Mr. Bonola in his left hand. This is apparently the wound which he eventually sought treatment for at the hospital. Now, in Bonola's account, he claims that Gall was the one who grabbed the knife first and threatened him if he did not leave. In a second statement recorded with the assistant district attorney Peter McCormick on April 20th, Mr. Bonola provided an explanation for the numerous stab wounds that Gall had on her body, saying she kept moving, so he continued to stab her. And Mr. Bonola then said he put her body into the hockey duffel bag and wheeled her away. The 44-year-old also confessed to detectives that he destroyed Gall's laptop and cell phone by tossing them into the Hudson River because he believed they contained explicit videos of the two of them. Now, Mr. Bonola pled not guilty in the Queens Supreme Court on the 13-count indictment, which includes 2 counts of murder in the second degree, 2 counts of burglary, concealment of a human corpse, criminal possession of a weapon, and tampering with evidence. Believe this, if Mr. Bonola is convicted, he faces up to 25 years in prison. You would think it'd be a lot more there in New York, but who knows? A Connecticut man by the name of Richard DeBate was found guilty of all 3 charges against him, which included murder, tampering with evidence, and making a false statement to authorities. Now, prosecutors' theory of the case was that Connie DeBate was killed by her husband, Richard, so that he would avoid the fallout from a possible divorce after he got another woman pregnant. Now, Richard had claimed that the 6-foot, 2-inch masked intruder broke into the couple's home on December 23rd of 2015, tied him up, tortured him, and then the intruder shot and killed his wife. But Richard had only minor injuries when police arrived on the scene, and more than a year later, authorities found a key piece of evidence. In this particular case, it was Connie's Fitbit. That's right, the little exercise thing people wear on their wrist, right? Her Fitbit. And it showed, when they downloaded the data, that Connie was moving around for nearly an hour after her husband said that she had passed away. Now, Richard had told police that he took his 2 sons to the bus stop. He then returned home to grab a work shirt and left for work about 8:30 a.m. He said Connie was still home getting ready for a fitness class at the YMCA. Data on her Fitbit indicated she left the house at about 8:46 a.m. The arrest warrant said Richard claimed he returned home around 9 a.m. because he forgot his laptop. At that same time, he received a text alert that their house alarm had been activated. He claimed he then encountered the alleged intruder dressed in all camouflage, including a mask and gloves, and he told police that the intruder manhandled him and began torturing him with a blowtorch while he was strapped to a chair. Richard also claimed the intruder stabbed him with a box cutter. Richard told the police they had started to fight when he heard Connie return home, and he yelled for her to run. The intruder, he said, followed Connie into the basement, and Richard said he then tripped down the stairs attempting to go after the masked intruder and claimed to hear a gunshot, after which he couldn't hear Connie for about 5 minutes. After claiming that the intruder fled, Richard then told police he crawled back up the stairs, pressed a panic button on his alarm, and called 911 at about 10:11 a.m. Investigators took records from Connie's Fitbit, both on their cell phone computers and house alarms, which would contradict Richard's story. Richard logged into a computer at the house at about 9:01 a.m. At 9:04, he emailed his work supervisor saying an alarm at his house had gone off and that he'd have to return to check on it. Connie's Fitbit registered movement inside the house at 9:23 a.m. She was active on Facebook between 9:40 a.m. and 9:46 a.m. The last recorded distance her Fitbit tracked was 1,217 feet between 9:18 a.m. and 10:05 a.m., and detectives concluded that the total distance it would take Connie to walk from the car to the basement where they found her body was no more than 125 feet. Richard had been free prior to the start of the 5-week trial after posting bond, and he was ordered jail Tuesday upon conviction with a new $5 million bond if he can post it. But either way, His sentencing is set for September 26th of this year. It's amazing, ladies and gentlemen, that technology, isn't it? Doesn't lie. Memory doesn't fade, can't fabricate. It is what it is. Next on the docket, another teenager being tried as an adult. Most people seem to think, hey, if you commit the crime, do the time. If you commit adult crime, do adult time, at least from the story we brought you last week. Here's another one. We previously brought you this story, but the 17-year-old Iowa boy accused of helping a classmate kill their high school Spanish teacher, the court has determined that he will be tried as an adult after the judge denied his request to have the matter moved back to juvenile court. District Court Judge Sean Showers ruled Jeremy Goodale will face a first-degree murder trial in adult court for the beating death of 66-year-old Nohima Graber, who taught at Fairfield High School. Police arrested Goodale and another teen, Willard Miller, in Graber's killing. Graber's body was found November 3rd, hidden under a tarp and a wheelbarrow and a railroad tie at the Fairfield City Park, and the police said that she had been beaten to death with a baseball bat. In his ruling, Judge Showers cited the juvenile court's limited time to rehabilitate Goodale if the teen is found guilty, noting that the longest sentence Goodale could be held as a juvenile in the system was 6 months past his 19th birthday. That's the problem with the juvenile system somewhat on these violent crimes. Yes, they're juveniles, but they cannot hold them for very long. That's the problem. Now, a lot of people say, hey, they're teenagers. No one should be held accountable for anything they do until at least 25. Men's brains don't mature as quickly, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality of it is the court has to punish people based upon the acts that they committed. Certainly age is a mitigating factor, or it could be an aggravating factor, because if you're committing that crime at such a young age, what are you going to do as an adult? Something to think about, perhaps. Let me know what you think. And maybe this is a case of karma, but a man dies while burying the body. Yeah, that's right. You heard that correctly. Sheriff deputies found 60-year-old Joseph Anthony McKinnon's body after neighbors called and reported an unconscious man in a yard in Trenton, South Carolina. As they investigated this man's death, deputies found another body wrapped in a trash bag in a freshly dug hole and determined that it was the man's girlfriend, 65-year-old Patricia Ruth Dent. Now, an autopsy determined that Miss Dent had been strangled, and neighbors said that they saw McKinnon digging a hole in the backyard the day before. An autopsy of McKinnon determined that he had died of a heart attack, well, while he was trying to dispose of the girlfriend that he had strangled and was going to bury her in the backyard. Now, a deputy said that he was nearly done when he sat down the shovel for a moment, walked away, and dropped dead. Karma, perhaps, ladies and gentlemen, let me know. And finally, our dumb criminal of the day, another South Carolina resident. An investigation began when a Chesterfield County deputy in South Carolina received an unsolicited photo of neatly packaged marijuana and a pistol still in the box with an ammo cartridge. Deputies then texted a number back asking for the price of the firearm and marijuana. The suspects gave the deputies a location in the town of Sherrah and met the suspect there. The suspect was carrying a bag that contained in excess of 90 grams of marijuana as well as a pistol. The 31-year-old suspect apparently was dumbfounded by his texting mistake, and he was arrested and charged with possession with intent to distribute as well as possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. As to how the man got the deputy's personal cell phone, well, it was apparently purely by chance. You got to double check those text messages and numbers, ladies and gentlemen, particularly when you're, also it doesn't hurt apparently when you're letting the world know that you have illegal items for sale. Just be cautious. All right. That's all we have for you today, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.